Ready to level up? Chumba Casino is your playbook to fun. It's free to play with no purchase necessary. Enjoy hundreds of online social games like blackjack, slots, and solitaire anytime, anywhere with fresh releases every week. Whether you're at home or on the go, let Chumba Casino bring the excitement to you. Plus, get free daily login bonuses and a free welcome bonus. Join now for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Play Chumba Casino today. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. TNCs apply.
Culpable Case Review episodes are released on Friday. To binge the entire installment ad-free, subscribe to Tenderfoot Plus at tenderfootplus.com or on Apple Podcasts. Now, let's start the show.
The views and opinions expressed in this podcast are solely those of the individuals interviewed and participating in the show and do not represent those of Tenderfoot TV. All individuals described or mentioned in this podcast should be considered innocent until found guilty in a court of law. This podcast contains subject matter such as violence and other graphic descriptions, which may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
I hate seeing what this has done to my family. And that's one of the main reasons that I wanted to do this, is because I want us to heal. And we can't heal until there's justice for my nanny. I sent out a mass Facebook message to my cousins on Facebook just to let them know I'm doing this. If you want to be heard, if you have anything you want said. And I actually hadn't talked to Brittany since this happened, since before Nanny went missing. And as far as I know, she hasn't really spoken to anybody about that time. Yeah, she definitely wants to speak, and I think it would be good for her to speak. If Nanny was a mother to anybody, it was her.
Just as Casey described previously, Goldie, or Nanny, as they called her, was a mother figure to Brittany. In fact, Brittany was living with Goldie at the time she went missing. These two individuals became the main suspects after Goldie's disappearance. In speaking with the cousins, you definitely get the sense that all this has been kept under wraps for the past 28 years. But now, they are finally breaking the silence.
And we lost so much because Rita and Raymond decided at whatever moment that Nanny didn't need to live anymore. And it wasn't their decision to make. And if there's any justice to be had, maybe this can help. I don't know exactly how, but I'm hoping it can.
Now that Casey has shared her story, she knows how important it is for Brittany to do the same. Not just as a means of keeping Goldie's memory alive or continuing the pursuit of justice, but also to try and heal from this, a process that should have started a long time ago. Here's Brittany.
I mean, we've been friends on Facebook. Me and all of my cousins for 10 plus years. And we've never even really spoken about this until this podcast came about. They've never questioned me. I've never questioned them. The most we do is like sad posts and birthday posts about her or something. That's it. Just talking about the incident and what happened. Nobody ever does. We recently just reconnected, and like the more we talk, I'm gonna see why they kind of kept the families apart. She has information from like that side. I have information from the Douglas side, and then kind of just being there and what happened. It doesn't matter how much you try to sweep it under the rug, like, it just keeps coming back up.
The circumstances around Goldie's death have created a complex web for this family. But if there's one thing Brittany is sure about, she feels that talking about Goldie's death will force this family to face its demons and come to terms with what really happened all those years ago.
I just feel like this will be a good healing experience for me. I reached out to my mom and told her I was doing this. And I asked her if she had anything to say, and she didn't even respond back. At this point, it's just kind of going to be her burden to bear, you know? All I can do is speak my truth.
This is a Culpable Case Review of Goldie Thornsberry, Part 2. After speaking with Casey about the unsolved murder of her grandmother, Goldie Thornsberry, I knew I had a story worth telling, and a compelling one at that. A story full of heartache and family trauma, with plenty of twists and turns. But as we came to the end of our interview, I learned that there was yet another twist. When Casey informed me that she had reached out to her cousin Brittany regarding the podcast and learned that she too wanted to share her story, it was an opportunity I couldn't pass on for obvious reasons. If you remember, when Goldie went missing from her Fayetteville, Arkansas home in January of 96, her granddaughter Brittany, a child at the time, was living under the same roof, along with her mother, Rita Flowers, and her husband at the time, Raymond Douglas. Though Brittany witnessed a lot around that time, she always kept it to herself, for several reasons you'll learn. Now, she's saying enough is enough. She's ready to get this weight off her chest, a weight that is laid especially heavy on her, because Goldie wasn't just a grandmother to Brittany. She raised her.
She's been around forever, like since I was a baby. We just used to have so much fun together, go everywhere together. Like, it wasn't really a good time. I don't remember that she wasn't in my life. My mom was never really allowed to have custody of me by herself just because she was kind of unfit. The most I know of her is just maybe a couple hours here, a couple hours there. My mom was a partier, so that always came first in her life. So once her and my little sister's dad divorced, I was with my nanny full time. She was great. She took care of all of her grandkids. Like, she was always there for people, always helping people, even when they didn't deserve it. She was an angel. I grew up in a place where, like, mixed race kids really weren't accepted, but she was always took me in, and she would always fight for me. I just loved her so much.
You might think that after nearly 30 years, one would start to heal from the loss of a loved one. But as you can tell, for Brittany, the scars left behind with the loss of her grandmother, Goldie, are still very raw to this day. Goldie helped raise Brittany from a very young age, as far back as she can remember, actually. Brittany's mom, Rita, had her when she was in high school. Unfit to take care of her, Goldie stepped in and assumed the responsibility.
You know, most of the time, it was just me and her. Like, I lived with her full time. So even when the cousins weren't there, like, she had me all day, every day. She would get me up in the morning and get me ready for school. She would pick me up from the bus stop, take me to see my mom at work if it's been too long. She was my mother. I mean, all this happened when we were kids, but yeah, we were always at Nanny's house playing, and our moms ran the streets a lot, so they would just drop us off at her house and go. So that's mainly what we did as kids, would just play with each other and hang out with each other. But then once this happened, it was kind of like, never really seen him anymore. I was 9 when this happened, so even still to this day, like, I don't really talk to much of my family. I don't talk to my mom. My sisters I don't talk to. I got one sister that I talk to, but it's just hard because people suffer so much mentally in my family from what happened. So it's hard. It's hard for us to look at each other. It's hard for us to be around each other, like, because there's just always this elephant in the room.
If you sold somebody a loaded gun who you knew was in a vulnerable state and they shot themselves, I think it is murder. Just because you're using the internet doesn't mean you get away with murder.
I'm Damon Fairless, host of Hunting Warhead. This season, I take you inside the business of suicide and the places desperate people go when they can't find what they need in the real world. Hunting the Suicide Salesman, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
there's been a lot of tension mounting between Brittany and Rita over the years, primarily from the time that Goldie went missing in January of 96. But Brittany explains that things had started to unravel sometime before that, when Rita's eventual husband, Raymond, came into the picture. Rita had recently gotten her own place, and Brittany was actually splitting time between the two homes. But it wouldn't be long before they were all moving in under Goldie's roof.
Well, right before she went missing, Rita got her own place, not too far from her. And we were kind of trying to get back into the routine of maybe me like being with Rita a little bit more, because Nanny was having some health issues and she's kind of in and out of the hospital a lot. So Rita had her own place and I was staying with her just a little bit more, just so Nanny could have the help. And one day I came home from school and Raymond was there. They told me that they were married and I had to call him dad. And I was like, what the heck? It's a bad relationship from the get-go. Very strange dynamic. They ended up losing their place because they were both addicted to crack. They partied a lot. During this time, it just got bad. Nanny really didn't like Raymond. Raymond was always trying to control the house and like kind of wanted to run over the house and go and come as he pleased. He was just like super disrespectful to her. They were arguing, constantly arguing. It was fine for my mom to be staying there, but I really think the only reason she allowed Raymond to stay in the house was because my mom was pregnant with his child. Other than that, I really couldn't see any reason why you would have someone like that in your house full time. I'd say about a week before she went missing, Raymond started making me sleep on the couch in the living room. Before that, me and Nanny slept in the bed every night together. And this was before she was even reported missing. So Raymond made me sleep on the couch the night before. And when I woke up the next morning, they woke me up to go to school. And they told me that she left. She just left in the middle of the night. And I just remember breaking down crying. I was screaming. I was screaming, no, no. She wouldn't leave me. She would never leave me. And they said, no, she's gone. They made me get up, go to school, act as everything was normal. They basically just took over her house. They were sleeping in her bed. Oh, I'm sorry.
Recalling these memories is obviously very difficult for Brittany. Looking back on things after all this time, now knowing the full scope of what happened to her grandmother, is very traumatizing. This is especially true about a particular family trip that Brittany remembers taking shortly after Goldie's disappearance.
A little while after that, Raymond borrowed a friend's truck and loaded it up with a deep freezer, and we all took a trip to Little Rock. We stayed there for a couple of days. Come to find out later that, more likely than not, we transported my grandmother's body to Little Rock to be dismembered and buried in a well. So we went back to Fayetteville and they just continued on. Everything was fine.
You'll remember from Casey's account that when the family first realized that Goldie had gone missing, sometime after the disappearance, they quickly grew concerned. Raymond and Rita were the last ones to have seen her alive and had failed to report her missing. So as time passed, suspicions around them only grew. It would finally come to a head in March, 2 months after Goldie's disappearance, when her bank alerted the authorities of some activity on Goldie's account.
A lot of them were concerned when it first happened.
Aunt Barbie came to the house. She forced her way in because Mom had been lying for so long about where Nanny was and just not letting anybody in the house, trying to keep everybody out. I mean, even then, like, 2 months go by before anybody even says anything. You know, like, there's a deep freezer missing out of the house. And then they don't even say anything. Like, the bank says something to the police. Then eventually they started getting into trouble for writing checks on her account. And that's when everything kind of just started hitting the fan.
While Goldie's whereabouts would remain unknown for quite some time, Raymond and Rita appeared to be the main suspects in her January disappearance from the moment Goldie's bank reported the forged checks in March of that same year. Authorities seemed to think this criminal activity lent itself to a potential motive. Raymond and Rita would be charged with second-degree forgery in September of that same year. And as they prepared to serve time, it left Brittany and her new baby brother in a precarious position.
They ended up getting arrested to go into jail and finish their sentence out. And me and my brother were just sitting in a room waiting because they hadn't told anybody that they were going to be going to jail. So we stayed the night in a foster home somewhere out in the boonies up by Fayetteville. And Raymond's sister and brother-in-law came to get us like either the next day or the day after. We ended up going to live with them.
This was about 200 miles away in Little Rock, Arkansas, where, if you remember, is where Brittany and her parents took that drive with the deep freezer shortly after Goldie went missing. And about 4 years later, this is where land surveyors would make a grisly discovery in a dry well near some property owned by Raymond's parents.
We stayed with Raymond's dad at first, which the older I got, and especially after they found her remains, kind of freaked me out because it was just right across the street from where they had buried her. I literally used to play and catch the bus like right on top of her every day for years and never knew where she was at. I always thought that was kind of creepy that you could just drive by that spot every day. I know what you did. Just pass it as if it was nothing. That's why I always wonder if Rita Kay knew that that body was buried over there. Because, like, it's just so messed up.
After serving time for forgery, Raymond and Rita moved to Little Rock and lived with Raymond's family for a spell. They'd divorce in 1999 and go their separate ways. The investigation into Goldie's disappearance would remain quiet for a bit longer, until July of 2000, when her partial remains were discovered. But there was a problem. The remains left no identifying features to work with, so authorities wouldn't be able to match them to Goldie for nearly 10 years. Fast forward to 2010. Brittany, now an adult, had moved out of the state and tried to put this part of her life behind her. But that would all come to a halt in May of that year when the Little Rock Police Department finally revealed information about the human remains to the public for the first time. They claimed to have the remains of an unidentified woman, but were missing both of her hands, one of her legs, and her dentures. They also revealed that a cord had been fastened around her neck and a Washington Regional Medical Center bag was recovered. Eventually, experts were able to create a clay model based on the skull they'd found to show what the woman may have looked like. It was a shot in the dark, but it paid off in a big way because that clay model ended up being a pretty accurate depiction of Goldie Thornsberry. And with this information now shared to the public, it would take just weeks for her to finally be identified. A moment Brittany remembers all too well.
Well, I was in Minnesota when she was found and identified. My sister Courtney called me and she said they just came to the house and took Mom. And I'm like, took her where? She said they just came and arrested her for Nanny's murder. And I was like, what? No way.
There was a lady who lived down the hill from us named Miss Betty, which was my grandma's friend. She said, yeah, Miss Betty seen her on the news, identified her. They took DNA and they found out that it was her. And they came and arrested Mom, and they're on their way to get Raymond. Everything just kind of hit me like a ton of bricks because I hadn't thought about it in so long. It really just started like a bunch of emotions inside of me. It brought back a lot of hurt and anger, frustration, a lot of hatred towards Rita. It was just hard. In the end, I found out where they found her body at. After that, from just Googling and seeing what was going on with the case, since I didn't live in the state. Once I Googled and seen where the land surveyors had found her, it was literally right across the street from Raymond's father's house on a little piece of empty land across the street from there. And that's literally like the first place I stayed when I had to go back to Little Rock when they went to jail. Like I said, my bus stop was right there in front of it. Like, she was just there. Oh. It just hurts because of who she was. She didn't deserve that. She deserved to be just chopped up and stuffed in a well to be forgotten.
With the identification of the remains, investigators felt they had that final piece they'd been missing. And come June of 2010, police arrested Rita Flowers and Raymond Douglas for the murder of Goldie Thornsberry. A trial was eventually set for August of 2011.
I didn't go home for the trial, like any of that. Detective Franklin wanted to talk to me. I didn't want to. Because even though this happened, like, I still want to protect her for some reason. When we used to go talk to the cops, Raymond used to make me be quiet. He didn't want me answering questions about my nanny and where I think she might be, you know, so it's just all messed up. I always thought that Mom and Raymond killed her. They did something to her. She was there when I went to bed that night. She had no intentions on leaving me, especially not with them.
As the trial approached and evidence continued to mount, Rita would end up striking a plea deal to testify against Raymond. When they entered the courtroom, it felt as though the prosecution had built a strong case. The theory that prosecutors presented at trial was that Raymond hit Goldie over the head with an alarm clock, then choked her to death with a power cord. She was put into a deep freezer and eventually transported to the vacant lot in Little Rock, Arkansas, where she was dismembered and dumped in a well.
They pretty much put everything on the docket that they could possibly convict them of. A lot of the evidence that they had against them was just kind of circumstantial just because the case was so old. It was pretty much them guessing what they thought happened, even though they were right for the most part. But nothing came out in the trial that I didn't already know or live through myself. They knew about the freezer, they knew about the drugs, they knew about the checks, they knew about the truck that he borrowed. Like, they knew everything. They knew that they had been living in her house for the past 2 months while she was missing. The truth was there. Just the players in the game could not be trusted. His family hired like attorneys, just like went all out for him. Rita didn't have all of that, and she was just trying to get out of trouble. she ended up taking a deal to testify against him for the murder charges. But I just knew that wasn't gonna work anyways. Like, she was gonna get on the stand and lie to make sure both of them were able to get off of it.
She's right. Having Rita testify turned out to be a big mistake. After she was caught lying on the stand, it would quickly lead to a mistrial, and she would end up serving a short sentence for hindering the prosecution as a result. But that wasn't quite the end of things. 2 months later, in October of 2011, Raymond Douglas would be tried again for first-degree murder, sparking renewed hope. But after just 2 days, the prosecution would fail to get a conviction once again. The jury would find Raymond not guilty, making him a free man.
I don't know how people live with secrets like this. I mean, I don't even know if you can with something like that weighing on you all the time, you know? I'm not sure if they planned it together, if he planned it by himself. I just know once it started happening, she just went along with what was happening, because that's just her personality. She'll put a man over any and everything. I can just say that whatever happened, she should have did more and she should have spoke up.
It's an unimaginable ending to the life of Goldie Thornsberry, and for all who loved her and leaned on her as their support system, especially Brittany, who was there front and center during the whole thing. Now, some 28 years later, she's left with the fallout, trying to reconcile her grandmother's death and the reality that she may never get justice.
She didn't deserve what she got. She didn't deserve that. She never would hurt anybody. She wasn't gonna cause them any harm. So it's just like, basically just destroyed a family for nothing. I mean, at this point, it's just kind of gonna be her burden to bear, you know? Why not talk about it? They can't try you again. Why are we not talking about it at this point? I just look at it like, I mean, I have to be accountable for me and everything I do, you know? Whether I want to talk about it or not, it still has to be dealt with, you know? I don't see her ever doing that, so I don't see myself having a relationship with her.
To add yet another layer to this tragic story, it has left a family fractured. Not just Brittany and her mother's relationship, but really the entirety of the family. It's not easy to move on from something as complex and personal as this. And it's not easy to heal from something as traumatic as this.
It's been kind of wild since all of it happened. You're either just like on one side or the other. You either think they did it or you think they didn't, or you just don't care. Nobody wants to talk about what happened. I see how uncomfortable it makes her, people around her. Like, it just makes people uncomfortable. And it's like, how do you sit around a person like that? How do you celebrate family events with someone like that? Like, it's hard. It's just hard. She was literally the only thing that just like kept the whole family together. And it's just been different since she's been gone.
Goldie's case is unique, not only because her daughter Rita and her daughter's husband Raymond were the main suspects in her murder, but also because they were ultimately tried for it and found not guilty. Now, 28 years later, Goldie's case remains unsolved. So the question is, what happens next? The reality of double jeopardy seems pretty clear that even if new evidence is found, Raymond and Rita can never be tried again for Goldie's murder. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the road to justice comes to an end here. This is something that both Brittany and Casey realize. So they'll continue to keep Goldie's memory alive, no matter the outcome.
I know he cannot be tried for her murder again, but there's other things that he can be tried for. And there's people out there who helped cover this up, who know something. And if any one of them would have come forward 28 years ago when this happened, it would have been a completely different story. I want him to know, and I want his family to know, they didn't get away with it. They broke our family. For sure they broke us, but they didn't get away with killing our nanny. And even if no other charges are brought, if nobody else has the courage to say anything, then at least the story will be out there again. People will know this happened. Like the story that was given to my cousins, Rita's kids, after Nanny disappeared, was that Nanny was a racist who wasn't happy with Rita dating black men. And that's why they had to stay away. That wasn't the case. That wasn't my nanny. My nanny taught us to love each other.
I think about her every day. Not a day that I don't want to talk to her, that I don't want to tell her something, that I don't want her advice. So that's really like the only closure that I'll never have is like not being able to see her. But as far as like the situation and what happened, like I definitely have closure on that. I'm at peace with that. I just wanted to come do this so my nanny's story could be told. I feel like this will help me heal. I just want it to be talked about openly amongst the family, just so we can heal and be better.
If you have any information about the murder of Goldie Thornsberry, please call the Fayetteville Police Department at 479-587-3555, or you can submit a tip on their website at www.fayetteville-ar.gov/1404/crime-tip. That's it for this episode. Thanks for listening.
Culpable is a production of Tenderfoot TV in partnership with Odyssey, written and hosted by Dennis Cooper. Executive producers are Donald Albright and Payne Lindsay. Our senior producer is John Street. Our producer is Jamie Albright. Supervising producers are John Street and Tracy Kaplan, with additional production by Eric Quintana, Andy Rustin, and Jordan Foxworthy. Editing by Jaja Muhammad and Sydney Evans. Mixing, mastering, and sound design by Dayton Cole. Our theme song is by Dirt Poor Robbins, with additional scoring by Makeup and Vanity Set and Dayton Cole. Our cover art is by Drew Bardana. Sources for this episode include the Northwest Arkansas Democrat Gazette and KATV. Special thanks to the teams at UTA, Beck Media and Marketing, and the Nord Group. You can follow us on social media at Culpable Podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, please take time to follow, rate, and review. Your feedback is greatly appreciated. For ad-free listening and exclusive content, subscribe to Tenderfoot Plus at tenderfootplus.com. Thanks for listening.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Culpable Case Review. Tune back in for additional episodes releasing each Friday. For ad-free listening and exclusive bonus content, subscribe to Tenderfoot Plus at tenderfootplus.com or on Apple Podcasts.